Good morning, Cascadia. You're listening to your community radio station, KBOO, 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon. Today is a special. We are doing a special program on America's disgrace, the dark, dirty secret of America's political prisoners. I'm Chris Andre. With me this morning is Linda Olsen Osterlund, a KBOO reporter, and Kent Ford, father of Patrice Lumumba Ford, one of the Portland Seven, following the September 11th, 2001 attacks. The U.S. government put Muslim communities under siege, resorting to highly publicized arrests to promote its war on terror. Patrice Lumumba Ford was one of the Muslims they targeted. The government would have you believe that he's a dangerous man, a member of a so-called terrorist cell in Portland, Oregon. We're here to speak the truth to power. First, we're going to hear from Kent Ford, Patrice Lumumba Ford's father. Patrice Lumumba Ford is currently serving time in a maximum security prison in Coleman, Florida, just about as far as one can get from Portland, Oregon, making it almost impossible for friends and family to visit and offer the moral support that prisoners need. Don't forget, a maximum security prison is not like anything else on this planet. There is probably nothing else more difficult and grueling to endure. Kent.
Thank you, Chris. First of all, I want to thank the community. I want to thank everyone for their prayers. I want to thank everyone for the concern about Lumumba and your continued support for Lumumba. I just want to start out by saying when Lumumba was at Victorville, California, you're driving to Victorville, that the women's institution on the right, there's a maximum security in the back, and then there's a minimum security on the left. Well, anyway, we get into Victorville one morning, so I didn't have any idea, you know, which one was the women's, which one was maximum security, or which one was the minimum security. But anyway, a gentleman who was there visiting his wife because of income tax evasion, he's the one that told me what maximum security was. So we go back to maximum security. It was on lockdown. We didn't get a chance to get in that day, so we had to wait the next day. We finally got in the next day. It wasn't on lockdown. But anyway, we got in to talk to Lumumba, and Lumumba says, "Daddy Kent," that's what he calls me. He says, "Guess who's over with minimum security?" I says, "Who?" He says, "John Walker Lynn," and he was caught on the battlefield in Afghanistan with an AK-47, and was captured. But don't get me wrong here. He had no idea that what had happened in on 9/11. He hadn't eaten in 4 days. But anyway, they gave him 20 years. And then when they pick up them, here's what happened. George Bush promised a religious right that if you help me get elected, I would give you the Justice Department. And that's exactly what he did. And so John Ashcroft went after all Islamic charities and all Muslims in Mars, and then Mars is in the United States. And the MI5, which is obviously equivalent to the FBI, there was a joke about it in Britain. One of the worshippers in Britain asked one of the MI5 agents, how many operatives did they have inside the mosque? And the agents just laugh, you know. Well, that's the same thing here, you know. It's the same thing happening in the United States, where you go to pray at the mosque, and probably 50% of the people that you're praying with are operatives that the feds have sent there.
Of course they are. Yeah. Of course. It's one of the, again, an open, dirty secret.
And so I just want to start by reading this. It says here, in the FBI's eyes, Ford, a gifted student of Chinese languages and a former intern of Portland Mayor Vivek Cash, was born with three strikes against him. He was black. His father was a former Black Panther. And he was named after the lady of the Congo, who was assassinated at the behest of the FBI. The G-Man must have wondered how Ford have escaped their clutches to this point in his young life. But anyway, I want to go from there to here. This was in Time magazine the week Lumumba got arrested. And these guys was all at John Hopkins University. It was three of them. It was Curtis Haskins out of New Jersey, Anne Marie out of Ohio, and there's a Lumumba for Portland, Oregon. These got all guys at Johns Hopkins University for advanced international studies. So I just want to read this here. Bush was making a speech on the glories of American capitalism and all this business. So he spoke at the campus that day. And it says, after former President George Bush delivered his speech in China in 1998, a bright young American student stood up to ask a question, why Patrice Lumumba Ford wanted to know had charges against Oliver North concerning the Iran-Contra scandal dropped during Bush's term in office nearly a decade earlier. Bush was taken aback by the directness of the question, according to several people present at the John Hopkins Nanjian campus. 4 years later, Ford, now 31, is entangled with another Bush. This time it's George W., whose administration against Ford on October 4th claimed that he was part of a terrorist cell in Portland, Oregon. Ford and several others were charged with supplying to levy war against the U.S., contributed service to al-Qaeda and Taliban, and possessing firearms and further crimes of violence. Ford has pleaded not guilty to all the charges.
And so he should. No crime was committed here. No one died. No one was robbed. Nothing essentially happened. Young people, young Muslims, who were strong in their belief, went to do humanitarian care, give aid to their fallen brothers in Afghanistan. That's all, to offer help, to offer succor and assistance, and do what they could to alleviate the suffering of their brothers and sisters in war-torn Afghanistan. They were rounded up and put on a show trial to make Americans, make conservatives, the hardcore conservative right, pleased with themselves. They could call it a triumph, and the rest of the nation could continue to live in fear, because, of course, the idea of the whole war on terror was to keep people living in fear, keep people from thinking, from speaking out, and from going off to the real truth of what was going on here, and looking long and hard at who the real terrorists are in this picture. These young people are doing serious hard time. I want to reference an article that appeared in a recent issue of the New Yorker magazine, March 30th, 2009, by Atul Gawande. He's a doctor. The name of the article really says it all. It says, Hellhole. It's subtitled, The United States Holds Tens of Thousands of Inmates in Long-Term Solitary Confinement. Is this torture? And I believe at the end of the article, any reasonable person would say yes, it definitely is. Maximum security, that is, in fact, a form of torture, but it's socially sanctioned. Now, let's hear from Linda Olson, Osterlund KABU reporter. Thanks for being with us this morning, Linda.
You're welcome. And I'm also here as a supporter of Patrice Lumumba. I've known Kent for a while, and I've been a supporter of Patrice since he's been locked up. I want to point out that, you know, in his background, he has a Bachelor of Arts degree from Portland State University in East Asian Studies. As Kent mentioned, he got a postgraduate certificate in Chinese Studies from John Hopkins in Nanjing, and it was there that he first came to the attention of the U.S. government. He was not a rabble-rouser, but he did believe in standing up for and saying what he believed. He also came back here and worked for the mayor's office for quite a bit of time, and he played an important role there in helping form sister city relationships. And he's been known throughout the community for people who knew him from when he Manning was raised here as a, you know, a brilliant big teddy bear. I mean, he's sweet. He's a kind man. He has no history of violence, no history of aggression. And I think that's not something the public would ever know from what was put in the press when he was arrested. And it's important for people to know also that he traveled to China in the attempt to get to aid Afghanis under his own name, with his own passport, with his own money. He traveled because he could see on the news, we were talking about the tens of thousands of refugees who would be fleeing U.S. aggression there. And he felt that he had a need to go there and give aid, that he could not look as a Muslim at his own son and think of other sons of other Muslims being murdered for nothing. And I think it's important to know that he was standing up for innocent victims, what we call collateral damage. The bombing in Afghanistan was supposedly in repayment and to fight what had happened in 9/11. But the majority of those who were killed or damaged by the U.S. aggression had nothing ever to do with that, maybe didn't even hear about it. So that's what his motivation was. And what's also important to know is that he never got into Afghanistan. So he came home. He was actually home a full year, living his life, going to the mosque and actually, you know, he would go to Costco and get food supplies for new refugees. He was that kind of guy.
And also go to the airport, pick up refugees and find them places to stay.
He was a social activist.
Community, social activist with this huge heart. And
as was his father, too.
As his father has always been.
So it's always been about social activism in this family. It's a tradition.
Absolutely. And his mother is also a wonderful example of that. And they really believed in education, which is what he was furthering. He taught English to people who came to this country. So it was only when the administration needed to throw up the ramp up the fear of terrorists, that they decided to round these men up and call it a conspiracy. Now, I do want to say they tried to create this conspiracy. The federal government did. It's in the record. They had an informant. They paid that informant. They gave him money. They bought him guns. They bought computers. The federal government bought those to incite young Muslims in that mosque to travel to Afghanistan.
This goes back, of course, to the infamous saga of Geronimo Pratt. Informants have been the critical tool that the government has whenever they need to find a target. They use an informant to go after people. In every instance, in the Green Scare cases, Marie Mason, Jeffrey Lures, all of these people. And it goes back, of course, to Geronimo Pratt, where, of course, this fellow Butler completely set him up with a letter. So this is all of a piece. It's consistent. None of this is accidental. You can talk to anyone who wants to know more about Patrice Lumumba Ford can talk to Mike Sweeney, who's one of his teachers at Lincoln High School. Patrice Lumumba Ford, And as a part of Mike Sweeney's class, and also Professor Darren Miller
at Portland State.
Exactly, but they he was instrumental in bringing, of all things, Ladysmith Black Mombasa to Lincoln High School, and he introduced the group. He has a long history, a long background of intelligent, compassionate community activism. At this point, it is just about 10:45. I need to let you know that you're listening to your community radio station, KBOO Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM. Today is a day of special programming on America's political prisoners. Right now, I have with me Linda Olson Osterlund of KBOO and Kent Ford, the father of Patrice Lumumba Ford, one of America's preeminent political prisoners. In just a little bit, we are going to have more politics, more music. We're going to hear about the Green Scare. We're going to have Politrix, Seeds of Wisdom, listen to that. And then we're going to have a Bill Dunn interview, prisoner statement CDs, and more on political prisoners redux. Also, we'll have Kenny Zulu Whitmore and much, much more. So stay with us this morning. We're going to be opening the phone lines in just a few moments, right about now. So anybody who would like to call in with questions or comments, especially if you or someone in your family or a friend has experienced what it's like to be a prisoner in America, then we want to hear from you. So let's talk a little bit more about the background, about the actual setup, how it happened.
Okay, well, let me start out by this. Linda read Lumumba's resume, and I just want to start out by this. And this happened before July 25th, 2001, before 9/11. When he was the intern at the mayor's office. He says here, he wrote to Mayor Revere Cass, as a member of Portland Muslim community and as a human being, I am surely more civilized people are very concerned with the daily atrocities that are carried out by the Israel government against the Palestinian people. The use of helicopters, fighter planes, tanks, and other means of lethal forces against a civilian population is not only immoral, but it is illegal and irreprehensible, especially when perpetrated by a government that represents a people who were themselves victims of incredible atrocities. The Israel government blatantly disregard for any and all standards and forms of normal conduct when dealing with the Palestinian population has violated all the basic tenure of the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights. The government's open and unashamed defense and justification of terrorism acts committed by some of its citizens and is equally disturbing. Not even the apartheid government of South Africa at the height of its repression against the black population was so brutal as a Muslim, as a citizen of Portland, and as an American and as a human being, I can no longer remain quiet about the gross injustice. Therefore, the Muslim citizens of Portland appeal to you to take a stand for justice and human rights by officially canceling Portland's sister city relationship with the city of Atkinson in Israel. Excuse me. Our decision comes from much discussions and goes beyond policy, race, and religion, and touches the core of the human soul. Love of humanity and justice and his hatred of violence, brutality, and injustice. We urge you to check the reports put out by Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, and the United Nations, which clearly details the human rights abuses of the Israel governments. Mayor Katz, we are confident in your own stated concerns of the human rights of beings that you will do what is right in your power and which is best to ease the collective conscience of the citizen of Portland. Well, after she got this letter, she turned it over to the FBI. And this was in July, long before 2001.
Yeah, that's what we're really talking about here. I think
interesting that our mayor would turn over a letter she received, that there was nothing scary about that letter. It was just a political opinion.
Here's what's scary.
She turned it over to the FBI without even an investigation going on. She just decided political speech was scary.
Well, you see, in America, all you have to do is turn on the news to see that violence is perfectly A-OK. It's our daily bread, virtually, as far as the media is concerned. The reason why Patrice Lumumba Ford was such a threat that he needed to be rounded up and put in a maximum security prison was that he had strong leadership qualities. He was exceptionally, by any standards, exceptionally intelligent. And he was a black man living in America. That's what made him a threat. Violence would have been perfectly okay with the existing administration. Violence would have been a daily thing. But the fact that he had strong leadership qualities, exceptionally intelligent, and he was a black man in America, made him dangerous to the powers that be. That's basically what it really boils down to. And look at it, looking around this country, Pelican Bay, Angola, mm-hmm. maximum security prisons all across this country are full of people whose the idea is, the intent of the whole process is to destroy the mind.
Supermax in Colorado.
To destroy people's minds, to destroy those very qualities which ought to be applied to rebuilding our society and our culture and bringing it back from this malaise, this illness that we seem to have allowed ourselves to slip into.
After, okay. I think you're right, and I think you add on that he was a Muslim, and that's what you see with the Florida. I'm not remembering the Miami Six, but the six men in Florida who were African American Muslims. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, not Lackawanna, but anyway, the six that were, that was also the use of an informant, an instigator. Mm-hmm. The men themselves never took action. I think there was also a parallel with John Walker Lynn. Mm-hmm. I heard his father speaking about the circumstances of when he accepted the 20-year sentence, and I'd like to bring that up about Lumumba. When they rounded up these guys, they put intense pressure on them. Initially, they were willing to give them just 5 years in jail. They actually put that out as a plea offer, but then word went back to Ashcroft, and he said absolutely no and gutted that. Mm-hmm. Also, what happened
was... They had to make a show. It had to be... It had to be.
So I want to make a point about how they went after him then. What they did was they had the attorneys, the prosecution told the attorneys, we've done a poll, and if you go forward with a defense, the overwhelming majority of people in Portland will put you in jail for life. If you literally, you're away for life, and we've got enough charges to do it. So if you want to get out ever, you need to accept some form of plea agreement, and you need to turn on each other and tell on each other. And under that pressure, some of the weaker members of the org, or the, it wasn't even an organization, of the people who were charged, began to crumble. And so it went one by one. And finally, Lumumba felt he had no choice but to sign a plea agreement. He never said that he intended to cause anybody harm. And indeed, in his statement that he read in court, he was very clear about his reasons, which we talked about earlier.
I was in the courtroom when that was read out.
Okay,
and we were shocked because here there were some heavy hitters. That was Stephen Cohen, I believe it was, one of the attorneys, the civil rights attorneys, that had defended Lynn Stewart. He was in the
Stanley Cohen.
Stanley Cohen. Thank you. Stanley Cohen was there, and we thought, yes, now you know we're going to come out of this in one piece. So the plea agreement was a bit of a shocker for everyone. But what choice did they really have? They're being told that they're going to face a life sentence.
And then a poll was taken that a Muslim defendant couldn't get a fair trial in America at the time.
And Stanley Cohen also encouraged them to accept that plea.
He did.
I want to say that. And that's been a black mark against his long history as a civil rights attorney.
We have a call. It's getting close to the top of the hour. And if we can take one call. Yes, good morning, caller. You're on the air.
On the move. Hello?
Yes, good morning. Welcome.
Hi, how you doing? I'm Janine Africa. I'm calling from Cambridge Springs, Pennsylvania.
Janine Africa, welcome to the KBOO Airwaves. We are so very pleased to hear your voice. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing very good. Thank you.
Talk about can you talk a little bit about what it's like right now being a political prisoner in America?
We're very strong about it. You know, we knew what we were facing when we made the decision to confront the officials in Philadelphia. So for our part, you know, we knew what to expect. But what we want people to understand, and that's what our family's trying to get across to people, is that there is political prisoners, and that people need to understand that just because you are convicted and put in jail doesn't mean you're guilty of a crime, and that this government has fooled people for years saying that there is no political prisoners. There are political prisoners. We are only in prison because we tell the truth about this government. If we were to leave MOVE today, we would get paroled.
This is true, and you speak for so many other people. We have great difficulty getting people's voices on the air. It would be truly wonderful if you would just continue to tell us more. Tell listeners a little bit about MOVE and how all of this started and why you are where you are right now.
The MOVE organization is an organization for life. That's our belief. to protect life. And that brought us into contact with confronting politicians, so-called activists, anybody that put themselves in a position saying that they were doing for the community and had the welfare of the community at hand and did not do this. So we were protesting against the elderly homes where they were being abused, the zoos where animals were being abused, the puppy mills where animals were being abused, different politicians, congressmen that were not living up to their end of taking care of the needs of the people. And when we would confront them, rather than be honest and say that, yeah, you're right, we're not doing our job, we're in it for the money, we really don't care, they called the police on us to keep us away from their offices, to keep us from talking to them. And as the police got involved, they put themselves between us and the politicians that we were confronting, and that's how we started getting arrested, even though by their constitution we have a right, free speech, we have a right of demonstration, but they were arresting us anyway. And the arrest kept building up because they were trying to use the arrest to beat us down, to back us down, to make us shut up and stop confronting the politicians. It didn't work. So the beatings and the arrests escalated.
This call is from the State Correctional Institution at Cambridge Springs and is subject to monitoring and recording.
The beatings escalated, the jail sentences escalated to the point where our children were being killed. You know, our men were being severely beaten. And it just got to a point where the Philadelphia officials saw that nothing would stop us, so they planned to kill us, to exterminate us. And that's where the 77 attack was enacted, and we held them all for a year. And then in 78, they just out and out said they don't care. They attacked the house full-fledged, over 600 firemen and cops, all kind of automatic weapons, everything, for 12 adults and 12 children. They attacked us, and in their attack, they killed their own cop. They injured their own people. But because we came out the house alive, we were arrested and charged for it, and they know it. There are policemen that have told different reporters that they know that Move didn't kill a cop. They know that the cops were killed and shot by other policemen, but it's going to be kept this way because they want us in prison. So that's where it is today. We got 30 to 100 years. 9 people for the shooting of one cop with one bullet that they know we didn't do. He was facing us. He was on street level. We were in the basement. He was shot in the back. Bullet traveled downward. Impossible for us to have killed him.
Impossible. But it's certainly possible for the rest of the events that happened after that to all come together to arrange that yet another person who is strong enough and brave enough and smart enough to stand up and speak truth to power is now a political prisoner. Janine Africa, we, all of us here at KABU, are honored. We are blessed and honored for you to be speaking with us today. With me also is Kent Ford, the father of Patrice Lumumba Ford. Would you like to say hello to Kent? His son is doing 18 years in maximum security prison in Florida. Janine, Kent, Janine.
Hello.
It's a pleasure to talk to you, Janine. I got a chance to meet Pamela and Ramona. I forgot why they were at Portland State here in Portland here, and I enjoyed a nice evening with them. And Pamela, she said she could have got out after 3 years in prison, as she would the Move Africa group, and she refused to denounce it, and therefore she stayed in jail for another 7 years.
Yes, indeed. That's exactly how it is.
But it's a beautiful thing. These groups have it. Pamela and Ramon Africa, Fred Hampton Jr., Deborah, and all these guys have been traveling all over the world there's streets named after Jamal in France, Venezuela, Cuba. Just about all over the world, and anyway,
Geronimo Prata Street's named after him in Africa.
Yes,
in Tanzania.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Geronimo, you know, he spent 26 years in prison, and then the chief witness in his case is all in the book Last Man Standing, He was the biggest deacon in a 10,000-member Baptist church, and to show you about the good Christians, 10,000-member Baptist church in Los Angeles. And then when Johnny Carkin was still living at the time, and he says, when he gets time to cross examine him, he wanted him. And so when that time came, Butler just completely disappeared. Mm-hmm. So they turned around more loose and gave him a water for $4 million. And he went to Tanzania where Peter O'Neill was, and he started building water wells for villages and stuff.
Wow.
But I just want to say this and show you. I get back to my son's case. My son went down to the Grand Oregon, and his car broke down down there. The next morning, the informant appeared on his porch with a tow truck and said he was this is all the FBI is doing. And then they took him to the Grand, towed the truck back. On the way back, they pulled over to a rest stop, and then they decided they wanted to pray. It was time to pray. And so there was a female FBI agent and a man FBI agent. They both walked over to him and said, "You guys are Muslims?" They said, "Yes, we're Muslims." And he says, "Well, we would like to know more about Islam." So what happened was, Lumumba in his naiveness, he says, "Okay, fine, give me your address. When I get back to Poland, I'll bring you."
This call is from the State Correctional Institution at Cambridge Springs.
Stay with us, Janine.
Monitoring and recording.
Stay with us.
Are you able to stay with us for a while longer, Janine?
I
have a total of 15 minutes. I got about 5 minutes.
Okay, I'll be finished in a minute. And then Lumumba said, "Okay, fine. When I get back to Poland, I'll bring you guys both a copy of the Quran." So the following week, going on his back driveway, who's coming up his back driveway but the same two agents that he was supposed to be delivering the Quran to. And so this was all just a put up thing by the FBI.
Of course, it's a setup. Yeah. It's always a setup. Janine Africa, before you have to leave us, can you tell our KBOO listeners what we can do to support you?
Well, the most important thing that we tell people is, no matter how small it seems, let this government, these officials, know that they are watching the situation and that they're not going to just let them keep us in these prisons and keep political prisoners in these prisons, to write the newspapers, call the newspapers, call the radio stations, flood the congressmen, flood any city officials with letters, with phone calls, to just constantly keep it in their heads that the people are not satisfied with what's going on, and the people are not going to rest until it's set right. Because it may not seem like much, but that's how this system operates. It operates on pressure. It's not going to do what's right for the sake of right. It only does things when it feels like it can't get away with it any longer. Mm-hmm. And if people let them feel like they can get away with holding innocent people in prison, they will do it, because they don't care about what's right. Mm-hmm. They don't care. All they care about is money and what's politically advantageous to them. So we tell people, just keep pressure on them. A letter, a phone call, anything is affecting these officials, even though it doesn't seem like it. Look what the people did. The people stayed together, and they kept them from signing that death warrant on Mumia two times. Mumia is still alive today because of the unity and support of the people, not the courts, the people.
Let me say this. I was very impressed by Ramon Alfago when she was here. She said that an issue came up in Congress about trying to get Joanne Chesima extradited back to the United States, and said, now we have two progressive people, black progressive and a black caucus progressive people in Congress. One of them is Maxine Waters, and one of them is a former Black Panther, Bobby Rush. And so they said, Ramon says, they signed a thing for to be extradited back to the United States. And so they approached him and asked him, why did they do that? She said, "Oh, we didn't know that was the Joanne Chesima." She said, "Okay, well, we'll give you that much. We'll give you that much. But even if it wasn't, why did you guys do it?" You know, and this is exactly what she said. I wish you'd have been in that night. I haven't heard a sister speak like that since the '60s.
Well, you're hearing it. We hear it again now. Janine Africa, what else can you before you have to leave us, talk a little bit more about how you envision, what kind of a future you envision for this nation.
Well, I tell you, people are going to have to face the facts. Look at what's happening. Things are not going to get any better, and people need to come together and put their priorities straight. Get important. Get the families together. Think about their lives and what they really need and don't need, because times are not going to get any better, and people are going to have to know how to work together to survive, because there's some very hard times coming for this country, and it's just no getting around it. You know, Obama may have good intentions, but the fact is this country is in a very bad situation, and there's only so much this man can do, and it's going to get worse as time goes on, and people need to face it and just think about what's real and what's necessary, what's important.
60 seconds remaining.
Okay.
Okay, they're getting ready to cut me off.
Okay, well, I just want to add one last thing. Lumumba was teaching at the Islamic school out in Beaverton, and his car and the principal of the school's car was broken into at the same night, and all the papers were stolen out of their cars. And nobody has that type of operation, and nobody has that type of coordination but the FBI.
And I think that goes back to what you're saying, Janine, and thank you so much for saying that.
Before we have to hang up, we do want to say how very, very happy we are that you could be with us this morning. And our love, our respect goes out to you. We will do what we can to support you. We have an address where our listeners can send letters of encouragement to you. And I have it here.
We'll have that at the front desk for people as well, so that if they want to contact Janine and tell her how much they appreciate, they can do that. I think she's left us now.
Kent, we're coming up. We went 10 minutes over because it was such a very special KBOO moment there. We have 2 minutes left, and I'm going to ask Kent the same question, is what can we do to support your son, Patrice Lumumba?
Well, here's what you can do, just to keep his spirits up and let him know there's hope, you know. I would like to ask everybody to write him Patrice Lumumba Ford, 9639-00011, USP Coleman 1, P.O. Box 1033, Coleman, Florida, 933521. Just drop him a line and try to keep his spirits up.
And if you see his poster around, talk about him to people. Now that you know more about the case, talk up his case. I think one of the most important things Janine said was they'd like us to forget about all of these political prisoners and just have them go away, and we can keep them alive with our own voices.
We will not let these people be forgotten. That is the key element in all the programming today. If there is one message to take away from the special KBOO morning on the day of the birthday of Mumia Abu-Jamal, is to remember that we must not forget.
Now, I just want to close by reading this one last poem that was written by Ives Hopkins. She was one of the first black reporters that was writing for the Oregon Journal, and then she switched over to the Oregonian. A name like that for Kent Ford by Ives Hopkins. No more afro, just a short kinky, gray kinky on a workman's cap. No more dashiki, just a wooden jacket to knock off the chill. Fry brand, now another face in the shopping mall. A worried dad wonders what's going to happen to his boy, bewildered by the government charges against his Patrice Lumumba. A former Panther tries to make sense of justice now. He didn't steal from anybody. He didn't kill anybody. I just want to close by rereading that poem of Miles Hopkins.
So don't let any of them forget. Keep this flame alive. Thank you so much, K. Kent Ford. Thank you so much, Linda Olson Osterlin. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, Janine Africa.
Thank you for having us.
And you're listening, of course, to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon, your community radio station. I'm Chris Andre. Thanks for listening, and be sure to stay tuned for all the great programming coming up today until 2:30, and, of course, beyond 2:30, too.